Welcome to the Deconstruction Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Spiker. I acknowledge that I live and work on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Siyok and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. In this episode, I got to talk to my dear friend, Tanya Wishlove. Tanya Wishlove is a master therapeutic counselor and a somatic experiencing practitioner. Tanya was born and raised on the West Coast and has been counseling in private practice in Kelowna as a somatic trauma therapist for over 10 years. Tanya studied trauma-informed somatic practice for over 5 years and is now currently in the third year of a four-year training program that further addresses the power of the body and nervous system to transform parasitic patterns of behavior and health. Tanya's favorite management strategies include movement, music, and humor. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I felt like I expanded my own knowledge and awareness around the nervous system and the role that it has in protecting and maintaining our stability and ways to increase our capacity to offer more options to our system's responses in the face of trauma, overwhelm, and diversity. Before I had met Tanya for the first time, I had heard a lot about her from our mutual friends who just loved and adored her and were really in awe of the work she did. And so by the time I'd finally met her a while ago, she was a household name in my little crew. And so I was like, who is this person? And so we're all at a restaurant together and the waiter comes up and, you know, we all give our order and then he gets to her and she's like, I love your hat. Which is like, I've heard people say that a million times. And it's like, thank you kind of reaction. And this man's face just explodes with joy. He's like, I have an entire hat collection. It's some of my most meaningful things. It's like, it goes into this like long in-depth history of how important this hat was for him and how meaningful it was that she commented on it. It's like, oh, cute. Warms my heart. Love those moments. Somebody gets to feel seen. Carries on throughout the night. And then he comes back and she's like, you know, I really need you to know that I really like your hair. And the same explosion of joy and wonder shows up on his face. And he again goes in depth about this long history of his hair and the meaning it holds for him. And he has this whole ritual around how he takes care of it. And just again, got to witness this person being seen in a way that was meaningful to them. And I was so moved by that experience because there was something in Tanya, this little nudge, this urge to go towards this thing that she saw in him. And when she did, it accessed this entire universe of meaning and depth for him. And I was like, oh, what would happen if we all just slowed down and listened to those little inner nudges towards something? What kind of encounters could we have with people? And it just like, who are you that you could just point out or see something in somebody that accesses some of their core components? And this is how I've witnessed Tanya's work since then. What she does is goes towards what feels good and how can we stay and anchor in that. And working in trauma, especially complex trauma, it's very common for us to get swept in the stories of what has been wrong and what feels wrong. How do we tolerate the overwhelming, difficult sensations and move through it? And so since that day, Tanya has been, I love her so much and continues to be this spotlight of moving towards something different and deeper in me and myself. And I feel so honored to have been chosen as one of her friends and, you know, our crew. We do life together and the impacts that these people's support have had in my life, I can't express enough. And so it feels like just such a joyful delight to get to share some of Tanya with you. Hello, my friend Tanya.
Hi, Rachel.
I am so glad to be doing this with you. It feels very good for me to be sitting in this space, having our favorite discussions together.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to this. I'm so happy to be here, and I feel really privileged that you asked me to be part of your podcast, so yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think there's a lot of talk circulating in the mental health field, and kind of mainstream psychology lingo about this term, somatic experiencing. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be this embodied movement happening that's taking us out of the cognitive CBT kind of talk therapy world, mm-hmm. and bringing us back to our bodies. But for the listeners who aren't maybe aware of or certain what somatic experiencing is, could you give us a little explanation about what you do?
Yes, I will. And I'm just going to preface this answer by saying I'm probably not going to give the classic definition because I don't really think along those terms, but the way that I would describe somatic experiencing is it's a body-focused, trauma-informed, therapeutic approach for people who have experienced overwhelm in their lives. We use the words trauma and overwhelm interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Who can't seem to feel safe in their environments, in their bodies. And it's based on research done by Peter Levine, who created this modality, developed this modality in the way that he practices and has taught it, where animals in the wild don't get traumatized because they are deeply connected to their innate physiological responses that help them move through, survival experiences in the wild. And we have this same intelligence inside of our physiology, but because of how we're raised and how things are modeled to us, we don't necessarily have access to it the way that would be really helpful for us. So it's kind of, I call it a homecoming. It's like returning us to our innate sense of how we move through overwhelming experiences, relying on our physiology, which is actually made to help us with this.
Yeah. I like the terminology, this homecoming, coming back to. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of the work of Dr. Hilary McBride, who's a trauma therapist and embodiment expert.
Okay.
And she talks about the flow of information between our body and our brain is 90% of the information comes from our body to our brain, and only 10% comes from our brain down. And so her whole kind of practice to the world is teaching embodiment as the subjective experience of being you in this moment, the felt experience of what it's like to be you. Moment to moment, and how we access that is through our body.
Oh, you just said so many good things there. Yes, I agree. In fact, like I had mentioned to you before we started, I just finished assisting at a beginner module of somatic experiencing, and the biggest thing I took from it that I don't remember from when I took the training myself is being in the here and now helps us to reconnect with ourselves, and also slowing things down, which when we've got, trauma physiology moving through our bodies, it seems impossible to even think that we could slow down, or we don't recognize that we're going that quickly. But what you just said about bottom up versus top down, I remember when I learned about that, I remember one of my instructors talking about the brain as an end organ when we're looking at this kind of work, and that it's like all the cars on the train. Out of all the cars on the train, the brain is the last one. And so the body is sending information and messages upwards, and the brain's job is to receive the messages and interpret them and sort them and then make decisions about what to do with that information. It's not meant to be in charge at this level of work. And that just clicked for me why I personally had so much trouble talking myself out of what I was feeling or doing my own work because I was trying to go from my brain first.
What a beautiful metaphor that actually helps reorientate things in my own understanding of the way trauma impacts the body in like this visual that just like clicks. I like that. And I think, I mean, I said this in my last podcast, so you'll hear me say it a lot, but that's the disservice of living in this cognitive supremacist world. Is we give most of the power to the brain.
Yeah.
It's like inverse to how I think our physiology is actually hardwired.
Right. Yeah. And I've been going back and forth on this for a long time. When I first learned about somatic experiencing, I'm like, bye brain, it's all body now. And, you know, the pendulum had to swing in order for me to learn about that. But I'm also recognizing the value of being able to, you know, catch my thoughts as they come and create different images of what I want to have in my life, in my imagination. And so it's sort of coming back to finding the balance between brain and body. But when it comes to working with trauma, I find circumventing the story and going right to the root of where things are happening, which is in the nervous system, working with sensation. It just really helps people be able to not get hooked into the thing that keeps us looping in our trauma pattern, which is the meaning that we make out of what happened. And this isn't always the case. I'm being very generalist right now. But for me personally, when I started getting into working with my body, then the stories didn't have so much power, and it was the stories that kept me in suffering. Yeah. And the story is really important. We don't dismiss the story, but we don't prioritize it necessarily. We need the story and we need to tap into it, but the body's got all the information.
And as you're talking, I'm like, oh, that brings us back to the importance of the here and now.
Right.
His story is past.
That's right.
It's like that narrative of what happened to us being brought here. But actually, it sounds like that would keep us from accessing the now experience of what's happening for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice catch. Beautiful.
I want to circle back to something you said at the beginning, where you said that you use trauma and overwhelm interchangeably.
Yes.
And I would imagine if someone's hearing that for the first time, that might be like, whoa, wait, what do you say? And so I'm wondering if you can give some light to that, maybe flesh that out a little bit, and then bring in the concept of safety and the role that safety has in trauma work when we're trying to work with our nervous system.
Sure. How much time do we have?
As I was finishing that, I'm like, that is a big question. And go.
Okay. So trauma and overwhelm. Probably the main instructor that I've worked with in this learning is the first person I heard this from. And when she spoke to it, she talked about it in the way of trauma is too much, too fast, too soon. We can't process it through our sensory system. It's too much information coming. It's like trying to have a drink of water through a fire hose. And that's what overwhelm is. And sometimes I find that people have, and I did this myself before I started learning about this, people have an idea of trauma as the thing that happened instead of the experience of the nervous system, which is in somatic experiencing how we look at trauma. It's not the event, it's the response of the nervous system to the event. Wow. Because more than one person can be involved in something, and people are going to have a different experience based on the capacity of their nervous system, their ability to regulate, their history, which is, you know, a piece of all of this. So it's not about, you know, I had this thing happen to me, although that is a truth. That's not necessarily trauma. Trauma is the experience of the nervous system in response to the thing. So, and somehow speaking to it from the perspective of calling it overwhelm takes some of the edge off. And it maybe normalizes and validates it, because one thing I say to a lot of the people that I work with and just talk to about this is, if you have entered this earth, you have experienced trauma. Just the way that we come into the world is overwhelming for our little nervous systems, even though we're made to do it.
Right. You so mean like birth.
That's right. Yeah. Birth. Wow. Yeah. So I believe that we're meant to go through these experiences that expand our capacity, and then we get to build the muscle, if you will, of increased capacity, increased access to regulation, more resilience. And we go through these, you know, I'm waving my hand up and down like a wave on the ocean, these movements of, I want to say, expansion and contraction, which builds our experience. We're not meant to go through life and have it just be tickety-boo, or else we would never evolve into resilient beings. At the same time, if we can't move through these experiences and land back into a place of feeling like we were able to navigate that with some self-efficacy and come back to a place of safety, then we're not going to have an embodied experience of, you know, feeling our own resilience. That was a lot of words, but
no,
that made sense.
What I'm taking from that is, I mean, what stands out to me as really beautiful is the semantic shifting from this trauma, this heavy kind of label, to overwhelm, which can help maybe soften some self-compassion for people to be like, yeah, I was really overwhelmed when that happened.
Yeah.
While simultaneously there's this empowering calling forward of agency and resiliency by saying, and we're meant to go through these things that help us expand into ourselves deeper.
It feels both like gentle and empowering.
Yeah,
how nice. You described that.
Yeah, I love that. And that makes me think of, and I'm diverting a bit from the second part of your question about safety, but we can get back to that. I remember hearing one of my instructors talk about something she named as the broken bone theory, where when you break a bone, if it's set properly and has a chance to heal properly, it's stronger in the broken place than if the break never happened. And the nervous system operates in the same way. When we do good repair at the level of the nervous system, we're actually more resilient. We have more capacity than if those ruptures or offenses to our system didn't happen. So it's not that, and I've said this before in another opportunity like this, but it's not that we want those things to happen. Mm-hmm. But we're actually made to, you know, ascend from them into a greater experience of ourselves and come out stronger on the other side, which it's pretty much the only reason I do this work. I find that so hopeful and empowering that we can actually be more of ourselves because of going through those things instead of being diminished and having to make ourselves less than or smaller because we had to experience these things that we didn't feel like we could navigate.
Become more of ourselves because of them. Oh, like that makes me want to just stand up straighter. It makes my chest feel like more full. Mm-hmm. That's a really beautiful way to look at that. Mm-hmm. I love you calling out the innate healing capacity of everybody, it sounds like.
Yeah. Our bodies are oriented towards healing and repair.
Yes.
It's our natural bent. And when people have had multiple experiences of overwhelm, their nervous system gets full. In somatic experiencing, we talk about the nervous system being a container. And it's not that there's too much energy in the container. It's about the capacity of the container to hold the energy. And when I say energy, I mean life energy, our vital life force energy.
Yeah.
And when we don't get to complete our experience of an overwhelm, which means, you know, it might mean running or fighting or a way that we need to protect ourselves. If we don't get to do those things in our own defense or assistance, then that life energy that we would have used to do that thing stays in our nervous system and it keeps looping, looking for an opportunity to complete. So somatic experiencing taps into where these patterns are running and invites them to complete.
Oh, okay. How you just worded that again clicked something into place for me.
Oh, cool.
When, I mean, it just makes sense of that language fitting into the idea that I think most people know about is trauma's kept in the body.
Yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? How is it kept in the body? And when you can think about that energy that needed to have this completion, this movement out, not getting that, and it being kind of like locked away.
That's right. It locks away. And then if more than one experience happens, it kind of gets layered on top of each other. But it's interesting because it's not like, oh, well, there was this event and then this event and this event. And can we deal with them all separately because they all happen separately? Mm-hmm. In the nervous system, it's all just sort of an increased level of dysregulation. Mm-hmm. And it can manifest in many different ways, like body pain or anxiety or depression or, you know, there's symptoms of all of this. And its root comes back to how the nervous system is managing this overabundance of unprocessed experience that's hanging out in the body.
So this makes me think of how I'm moving into the training for psychedelic somatic interactional psychotherapy, PSIP. It is a mouthful.
Can you say that 10 times fast? Yes,
probably. I say it so much. And the whole premise is creating the conditions for your body to be able to access what I've been taught is called the homeostatic self-corrective mechanism, which sounds exactly like what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we have all of these inborn innate mechanisms or defenses that help us kind of like relieve some of that pressure when it gets built up, like, you know, think about some anxiety or distressing feeling welling up and I take some deep breaths to just sort of regulate. myself, and that's a moment management application.
Sure.
But when you take away those capacities, and in this specific modality, the PSIP model, we call it selective inhibition, where we take away all of these little things that kind of like decompress this anxiety.
The management strategies.
Yeah. Exactly. When those are taken away, our nervous system gets activated.
Yeah.
And then what wasn't able to be processed comes forward. And then through the attuned presence and guidance of the sitter, they're able to actually move through their nervous system just by the nervous system taking over. Like the person's innate physiology, that homeostatic self-corrective mechanism, lets whatever needed to be completed, whether that's shaking, vibrating, crying, sobbing, whatever their system needed to move that out, takes over. Because it's going back to, we're hardwired to heal.
Right.
And in the right conditions, our nervous system knows what to do.
It knows what to do. The one thing that I think is really interesting about what you said, and again, we're talking about different modalities here, but a lot of the same foundation, is in somatic experiencing, part of the trauma-informed piece is we don't come into the dysregulation or the, you know, overabundance of unprocessed sensation, or sometimes we call them thwarted defensive responses, without building up the resource in the system first.
Yes.
So we're going to be tuning into how do we notice what is going well inside the body or in somebody's life. How much access do people have to resource? And like, everybody's got it. There is so much resilience and resource, even if people don't feel like they have it. If they even showed up, if they even called somebody for help to do a session, like there's just so much available, and sometimes we don't recognize that it's there. But in somatic experiencing, we really strongly orient towards the resource, because what we're paying attention to, we're actually feeding and making more of. So we're noticing where in the body, you know, if someone's trauma pattern is showing up in pain patterns or anxiety, which can feel like, you know, I mean, there's so many symptoms that people call anxiety, but then we notice where things are different. Where do things feel less intense? Where do things feel more spacious? Where do they feel supported? Where does something feel neutral? And then we bring our felt sense attention to that place, because whenever we are noticing our felt sense, we're actually having a conversation with the nervous system. The nervous system speaks to us through sensation. So we're engaged at that point. And when we're orienting our attention towards the felt sense, especially where something is feeling less bad or less intense, or maybe even comfortable or supported, we are literally expanding someone's access to resource inside their own system. And from that place, we can titrate into the trauma pattern and start moving through little pieces of the dysregulation in a way that's not actually going to overwhelm or re-traumatize the system. And with some cases of complex trauma and things like that, it's really, really important to do less, go slower, be gentle, because we've been blown up enough times. We don't need to do that anymore. And even a huge emotional release, while it can feel really good, there can also be this experience in the nervous system of it feeling a lot like the trauma pattern, because it feels like really big and almost uncontained. So as a practitioner, I tend to work from the less is more perspective. That's not everybody's jam, but it's fine, because I have a really sensitive nervous system. And I tend to attract the clients who need that as well. And so we're always working the edges and doing less and making it more nuanced. And so much happens when we do it that way. There's so much room for renegotiation there. So I love that there's so many different modalities for people to choose from that fits sort of how they operate. But as a whole, I'm a huge fan of going slower and doing less.
And that's something that I've always been really intrigued by when I do work with you, is is that orientating to slowness and what's feeling good. And I want to hear more about that. I just want to do a disclaimer. For the PSIP, you spend months and months of inner resourcing, and that's like what you're working toward is that session. It's not like, let's get in and start with that. It's that's the end goal of the work together. And so I absolutely honor and respect what you're saying. I will say Saj Razvi, who is the creator of this, is a somatic practitioner. And he is like a controversial figure, because he believes that the window of tolerance is important, but not all the work can be done staying in the window of tolerance, because that's not where trauma happens. And so he is definitely an outlier of saying, we need to go where there's big dysregulation and not be left alone in it and be guided through it.
Yes.
So he has a more intense approach than what I typically hear in the somatic experiencing world.
Yeah.
Full stop. So
yeah,
I understand there's that difference of intervention.
Yeah.
But I have found, you know, the first time I did work with you, I was like, I don't want to go where it feels good. Like, take me to the pain.
Yeah, and that's like, really, really common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the more, like, I've healed and learned and just engaging with you and hearing your reasoning behind it and the whys. Mm. And I'm a trauma therapist, so, you know, I recognize the usefulness of this.
Yeah.
We are such a traumatized, dysregulated society. And so do we need to recreate that in the therapeutic setting as well? Or can that be a new corrective experience of gentleness and relearning? Like you said, I forget your wording, but giving your nervous system more options or renegotiating terms with your nervous system.
That all sounds good. I wish I said that.
I think you did. However you said it, it was just such a, like, I felt this sigh of relief almost of, right, like gentleness heals. Actually, mm-hmm. and gives our nervous system something else. And so particularly with complex trauma, mm-hmm. attuned presence, emotional regulation, kindness, safety wasn't the experience they got.
Right.
And so what a gift that they get to come encounter you and be met with a different energy and be like, oh, you know, my nervous system can do this.
Right. Yeah.
Because you're showing them something different and helping them experience something different within themselves.
That's right. And the other thing gets laid down so strongly because it's being overcoupled with these really intensive energetic experiences. It's like nuclear level energy. Survival physiology is very, very powerful. Yeah. It's demanding, it's compelling. It wants to be the only thing that we pay attention to because it wants to finish. It wants to finish the thing it didn't get to finish. Mm-hmm. This is the energy that mums lift cars off of babies with. Like, so when that's looping in our system, it's really, really impossible for people to notice anything else. Mm. And then we're experiencing life through this filter of that level of energy. Mm-hmm. And then when we start to expand our awareness to notice what else is true, which is always the beginning of the work, is how do we build boundaries with our attention?
Wow.
At the end of the day, in my opinion, this is all about boundaries with our attention. Mm-hmm. And then as we develop those muscles of noticing the other things that are true other than the big yelling thing from the trauma physiology, then we get to complete these responses and our body gets to return to this even more grounded sense of capacity and self-efficacy and connection to ourselves. But it's really, really about boundaries with our attention. What am I noticing? What am I paying attention to? And again, we don't get to choose. This work is challenging, especially for people with a lot of experiences of overwhelm layered on top of each other. It's almost like we're wired to notice the thing that's screaming because that's what kept us alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's why we're still here, because we did that thing really well. And now we have to support doing a different thing. And we don't necessarily trust the different thing until we realize how it's helping us. It's quite an act of faith, to be honest, to take this on.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about how that thing kept you alive?
Maybe. I think the way that it usually comes up in session is when I'm working with clients and we're tracking sensation in the nervous system and their attention keeps getting drawn back to a body pain or something that's really loud or compelling and they're having a difficult time, we're navigating, noticing what else is true. And the conversation we have is, paying attention to what was loud and screaming is why we're still here. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to pay attention to the fact that the house is on fire or else we're not going to be able to run out of the house. Mm-hmm. But then our nervous systems can get stuck in that level of orientation. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't get to actually complete the action. And so you can be sitting in a restaurant surrounded by people that you love and your nervous system is screaming at you that the house is on fire. Yeah. And that's when we know that we're out of alignment and we need to do that repair work. So it's really, it was validating for me the first few times I started doing sessions, because one of my inherent physiological responses was freeze. There's fight, flight, freeze, fawn. But freeze was mine, and that's one that often comes on very early, very baby nervous systems go into freeze because that's the only one that they have accessible.
Yeah, yeah.
So freeze also comes with a pretty significant dose of shame sometimes, because we know that we're supposed to be able to move through things. Inherently in our physiological nature, we have a knowing that we're not meant to get stuck in these responses. We're meant to move through them and come out, you know, stronger and more grounded and resilient on the other side. So when we're not that, there can be this sense of somatic shame that comes on, because we know this isn't how I'm meant to be functioning in the world. And then that's where the validation is really helpful of, you know, we actually didn't get to choose this. This is how we stayed alive.
Yeah.
And now that the discomfort has come into our awareness at such a high level that we're seeking help, now we get to do the repair work. And I have a friend and a colleague who calls trauma an unintegrated resource. It's that life energy not able to mobilize. And then once we get it mobilized, she described this really well because she's a physiotherapist and her brain's like an encyclopedia. But she said, like, the life energy actually reintegrates into our body as energy that we get to use for creativity and cell repair and productive rest and digesting our food and all the things that we're meant to use that life energy for. It's not meant to be stuck in our tissues and thwarted in our system. It wants to be alive and dynamic and vibrant. And I think that's a beautiful thing that we're just made with this. So when we can help people access their own innate capacity to move these energies through in a really coherent way, then it is like a homecoming, having better access to ourselves. And it influences our choices, it influences, you know, the hope we have for ourselves and the options that we see available to us in life. Like, it just spreads our awareness so much greater. And that's a huge gift for people who have been stuck in, I want to call it, like, a narrowed survival orientation. You're just looking for what's wrong. Where's the danger? It's a very limited place to live. And that's, you know, when you're in survival physiology, you're just noticing the one thing that you need to take care of. So it's really coherent too.
Yeah. Yeah. You said so many things there.
I did.
And I want to, like, go into each one. I mean, the first thing is, it makes me think a lot of kind of the IFS language of protectors being burdened with having to protect the exile. And when we can unburden them with the role that they have, we unlock so much of the trapped energy that went towards whatever protective mechanism they had to live from.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it's just so interesting that the more these modalities come forward about body and trauma and healing, it's like this underlying current of, we're hardwired to heal. Trauma inhibits that in some way, but is so self-protective and adaptive in its development. But when it keeps going outside of the environment it was forced to be formed in, is when it becomes that maladaptive, quote unquote.
It's well said. Yeah.
And when we can heal that, unlock that, unburden that, whatever language we want to put to it, the energy that gets freed up becomes integrated and accessible and expansive.
Yeah, that's right. And then we get to use it for us. Even though it was for us, but this is, like, really fully for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not meant to stay in one place. We're meant to expand and move and grow. And moving that energy facilitates that, I believe. And also, when those potent life force energies are in our system being held, and our system, you know, let's just talk about the reality that the level of energy we have to use physiologically to hold those energies in is a huge cost.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people that come in with, you know, years and years of overwhelm, you know, they're not digesting their food very well and they're not getting good rest. And some people can't work anymore because the body is literally using up all its resources to just hold down these potent life force energies that the body is not allowing to move, because the body knows if we move these energies, it's going to blow. So it's actually a safety mechanism in itself to hold those in. I don't know where I was going with that, but it felt like a juicy place to say that thing.
Yeah. Oh, that fits exactly with what we're talking about. And again, just kind of brings me back to the awe, my own awe of the wonder of the human body.
Yeah.
Like the wisdom of our physiology.
Always orienting towards protecting us.
Yes.
Yeah, always.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that could be such a transformative shift if it's like the first time you're hearing like, oh, all of this is for me. It was to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
Can help undo some of the shame I think that's inherent with trauma responses.
Yes.
There must be something broken. Like I hear I'm broken.
Yeah.
All the time.
Mm.
I'm bad. I'm doing stuff wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, actually, if we look at the origin and underlying root cause of these, that is such an adaptive thing you took on.
Yes.
Like, and I'm like so grateful you're able to do that.
Yeah.
And now we can choose something else.
That's right. Because at that time, we did not get to choose.
Yeah.
The physiology chose for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Which I'm really glad that that happened.
Because
that's the piece that comes back to this is why we're still here.
Yeah.
Because our physiology made those choices. Some people speak about wishing they could have run or fought in situations where instead they froze.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of shame can show up. But the body makes the decision based on what it believes is going to keep us alive.
Yeah.
And we do not get to participate in that with our own cognition.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens.
And our body is so for us in those moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And until we have access to other options, the body's working on that operating system.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. But as we do this work and expand the capacity of the nervous system, then we actually have access to other choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like more of a social engagement.
Yes.
Piece that can come in. And, you know, sometimes that's not always appropriate, but just there's more available when we invite our bodies to move through these completion experiences. Good luck on love.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Deconstruction Podcast. Next week, I'll be releasing the second part to this conversation with Tanya about somatic experiencing and working with our nervous system to help heal trauma. Tanya doesn't have social media, but I'll post her Psychology Today profile in the show notes, and her private practice is called Safe Hearts Counseling. The music at the beginning and the end is Citizen by Sir Sly and Gary Clark Jr., and there was also Lime by Johnny Nash in there. Until next time, my friends.